Hello and welcome to Two Blokes Trading. Join us, the two blokes, Tom and Brandon, as we dive deep into the complex, exciting and potentially lucrative world of home trading. Hello and welcome to episode 93 of the Two Blokes Trading podcast. This week, target trading with our guest, Scott Barkley. Brandon benefits from the Tokyo Drift twice, and Tom grapples with a beast from the east. Brandon, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. How are you doing, dear?
Oh, that's very perky of you this morning. I'm very good. Although, having said that, people from the Two Blokes Trading community on Facebook will probably know what I mean when I'm talking about the beast from the east.
I don't know what you're talking about. What's happening with the beast from the east? Is this...
Well, it's quite frustrating with the UK. We have to, and especially the media in the UK, we have to put a name to everything. So if there's a storm, you know, it's a storm name, and then it becomes... Because anthropomorphizing, you're turning something into a real thing, and we tend to have a bit of a cold snap at the moment, and therefore it's the beast from the east because it's coming over from the kind of east and over from Russia, and therefore the wind's colder than it normally should be, the weather's colder, the temperatures are lower, and we're getting a little bit of snow, and yeah, so it's the beast from the east apparently.
This just sounds like a whole lot of whinging.
It is, and especially when you know talk about the Canada and the kind of weather you guys have on a daily basis. And I feel that I'm sure you guys don't have the need to give it an impressive name every single time it gets below 3 degrees.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really have a lot of days at above 3 degrees, so it's the winter, Tom. It's supposed to be below zero and cold. And for our American friends, that would be below 32 and cold.
Yeah, it turns out, just in case anyone's ever wondering about living in a log cabin, it doesn't really deal with anything below minus 1 or 2 degrees. It's a really bad idea to try and live in a log cabin at that time.
You've been doing that for what, 3-4 years now?
3 years, but not. It's never got down this low. This week has just been a complete nightmare. I mean, it's been cold for a while. So it started off, we had the hot water in the shower. So the shower died and the heating in my office died, but the rest of the house is okay. And I was like, well, I can live with this. You know, the toilet flushes, I can get water, the heating, the rest of the house is okay. So that was a pretty good start to the week. I can deal with this. It's probably going to melt at some point. And maybe if we turn the heating on really, because you can't get the pipes, because it's all underneath the log cabin and literally you can't access it. I did try with a kettle to put it over the pipes, but you just can't, just as a bit of information for people, you can't tip a kettle onto pipes when you're underneath a log cabin. There's no angle. The physics just don't work. But I did try.
And then the water just freezes around the pipe and makes your situation even worse.
Look, Brandon, I'm trying, all right? And then later on in the week, then the heating, the rest of the house died. But we still had water. So heating's gone. Water's still there. Can still flush the toilets. Haven't had a shower for 2 or 3 days now. Okay, we can survive this. The wife's off to our friends and neighbors to have showers. As she goes into work, because
well,
again,
someone's staying clean in your house. Jeez.
Well, exactly. I'm not. I can't be bothered. And then it gets to the point where everything's now frozen. Like, it gets to the point where I have to pour water that we bought from a shop into the toilet in order for it to flush. So at this point, I'm thinking, okay, fine. But I give up. That's it. I'm throwing in the towel and jumped in the car, my wife and I, and drove to my parents in Stoke. So there we go. That was my... Not a lot of work and trading happened this week, but a lot of shivering, a lot of moaning.
I know. I've heard the intermittent moaning or whinging, as you call it, from throughout the week. My heart goes out to you. I'm really warm in my really cold country. We're not only dealing with winter, but we had spring for a second. I saw squirrels starting to do their dirty business with each other, thinking that spring is here and it's mating season. And now they're just sitting in a pile of snow, not understanding what happened. You know,
yeah. The male squirrel was like, "Yeah, it's definitely spring. Look, trust me. All right,
come with me." squirrels.
So just so that people wonder why maybe the sound quality might be slightly different, it's because I am in the dining room at my parents' house as opposed to anywhere else. But moving on, Tokyo Drift, do you want to elaborate on what it is and why Tokyo Drift has made you happy this week?
Sure. So we'll be talking a little bit about the whole fundamentals and sentiment thing. And we're trying to just throw in a little bit of fun. And this week I had two trades on the dollar CAD, which were kind of describe how I trade, and it's one of my favorite setups as well. It's so easy to sit in them. They never go against you. Well, I shouldn't say that, a little caveat. Hold the bus here. Yeah,
but Brandon, you said, and I've got a mortgage out of my house for this trade.
Yeah, it's just they tend to be very very nice trades to sit in. You know, trades, well, maybe you guys don't know, you probably do, like what trades you sit in where they just don't really try to kill you, whereas most other ones seem like they viciously want to annihilate you from the planet. These ones are a little bit more nice. So the whole basics of it is that you look for, so I always trade a strong currency versus a weak currency because we have to trade in pairs. And so this week, I can't remember what the fundamental situation was, but it was dollar positive, US dollar positive, I should say. And Canada was negative. So naturally, I'm already thinking about going long dollar CAD. And what happened was during the US session or during the London session, we get a big push up higher. And throughout the Asian session or the Tokyo session, or Australian session, whichever you want to call it, it just drifts sideways in the upper 10 to 15% of the big push higher. And that's what I call the drift components. I call it the Tokyo drift because it happens during the Asian session. And then sometime around, maybe a little bit before the London session, it varies in what time it decides to go, but nothing has changed in the sentiment situation. It's still really dollar positive, Canadian dollar negative. So naturally, when traders get to their desks, they're thinking, I'm going to buy the dollar CAD pair because positive dollar, negative Canadian dollar equals dollar CAD goes up. And then they just continue the move higher because it was such a bullish move the previous day that it never pulled back. It just stayed in the upper 10, 15% of range. And so for me, I just get in that. The risk is very well defined below the consolidation in the Asian session. And then off we go. I look to target, you know, depending on how big the push was the previous day, but 30, 40 pips is a minimum. And then, yeah, it's a very simple trade. So if you go back and look at the charts on the dollar CAD, like a 15-minute chart or something like that, this would have been the last week of February 2018. You'll see it's just big push higher, drifted sideways, push higher, drifted sideways, pushed higher, and now we're into the muck. The dollar has gone negative because of the Donald Trump and his protectionist trade policies. But either way, that's okay. So that's kind of the Tokyo drift. Does that make any sense? Did I just waffle on?
You do waffle, but that was actually really useful. And every time I hear you talk about these things, it sounds so simple. And I'm sitting here going, yeah, I want to do this. But it's just not as simple as that because you have to build up your understanding of you know, do your analysis on a strong versus weak currency, why it's a strong or why it's a weak currency. And then you wait for these setups. So there is, like everything in trading, it's not as easy as, you know, the way that you explain it. There's always work behind it. But I'm glad that it's working out for you, Brandon. Like I say, successful positive pip week for Brandon equals a happy and positive podcast. So Hashtag winning, right?
yeah. Cool. So right, you want to crack on? We want to move someplace else? You want to go do this interview thing?
Let's do this. I know that our guest this week, Scott, you're a big fan of his, so I'll let you do the honors to introduce this good man.
Yeah, so we were fortunate enough to get Scott Barkley from proacttraders.com talking to us. I mean, the interview is very interesting. He talks fast. He gives actionable, usable content, and it was a lot of fun. And he's been around for a long time, knows a lot. I think it'll be a very good, informative podcast for our listeners.
Here he is. Welcome, Scott.
Well, good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. I mean, we got there in the end, a few little technical hiccups along the way, but you're now sitting here ready to rock and roll with the recording. So thank you very much for persevering.
No problem.
So as always, Two Blokes Trading tradition is that the guest introduces themselves and gives them a bit of background and kind of where you were before trading, how you got into it, and then how you became profitable and where you are today. So over to you.
All right. Well, it really started when I was 50 years old. I was in the technology sector and I lost my job and I was 50 years old and there were 5,000 millennials who would do the job I was doing for half the money. And so I found myself in a situation where I went, wow, I'm not going to get a job. And so I started a web design business just to keep me busy. And I was working 23 hours a day trying to keep food on the table. And I ran into a guy who wanted to give some money to Romania. I've been involved in that for quite a long time. And so it was a lot of money. And I said, wow, what do you do to make that kind of money? And he told me, well, I sit at my computer and I spend 2 hours to 4 hours a day and I make $20,000 a day. And I went, what? Oh, my gosh. And I
was looking,
20 hours a day in the on the web, and I wouldn't reckon anywhere near that number, let me tell you. I was barely breaking even. And so, of course, that piqued my interest. I got involved in trading immediately, just like everybody else. I was basically unemployed. My first mentor, I spent $5,000 to get trained by them, and then I had to open up an account. So I had to ask my wife for $5,000, and then I had to ask my wife for $5,000 to fund my account. And then 3 weeks later, I had to ask for another $5,000 because I'd already blown up my account.
Oh, no.
So, probably that sounds pretty normal for most people. But I did learn to trade started trading. And of course, I learned a scalping method and a moving average crossover method. And, you know, while the market was trending back in the days that I started in 2001, which was really, I'm a grandfather in the Forex business in the States because of that. But, the market trended really well there. We got up every day, bought the British pound dollar and sold it a little later and always made money, and things were wonderful until the market changed. And then we found out that all the little indicators and things that we had been doing, they didn't work anymore. And so, I had been successful. In fact, at one time I traded 78 trades in a row without a loss. And I was trading for 5 to 8 pips. And, I looked at my account and realized, I've made 78 trades. I risked 30 to 40 pips each time, and I made 5 to 8 pips. I said, there's something wrong with this. I risked so much money for almost no return. And that's what turned the corner for me. I realized that I couldn't be successful. I just said to myself, when are you ever going to be so in sync with the market that you're going to trade 78 trades in a row? And my answer to myself was never again. Mm-hmm. And so I took a paradigm shift at that time, and I began the process of looking for how the market actually worked. And I'm one of those guys who was just very fortunate. I ended up being in front of the right mentor at the right time. People say the saying out there, it says, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And that literally happened to me. At every turn in the way, I was a guy there that was a bank trader who told me how it worked. And so I was very fortunate that learning curve for me was pretty short because of having the right people in my life at that time. And I ended up becoming a consultant for FXDD, and I actually traveled for them for 3 years, teaching trading to their clients wherever they happen to go. And as I did that, I traveled with a guy by the name of Greg Michalowski, and Greg is he's a good friend of mine, and he was a bank trader in London. And so with 3 years of hanging out with him, let me tell you, I learned a whole lot of what the market actually does as opposed to what people think it does, all right? So that led me on this little quest. And by that time, we had started a little trading club, and we actually met on a place on the Chisholm Trail where the cowboys used to stop, and they would rest their horses, and they'd all play poker. And the street that our office was on was Poker Alley. And so we rented a second floor up there, and about 12, 14 of us got together every night to trade to London and test things and do all kinds of stuff. And we quickly found some things that worked. I have my partner, which was my old boss when I got fired, by the way. he's a mathematical genius. And so he said, I can program that. And so we began the process of creating some charts. Now, our whole goal was to create charts for ourselves, but we ended up with letting our friends use the charts. And then the next thing you know, we had 100 people in there. And so we created a club. And next thing we had 200 people in there. We needed redundant servers. We needed tech support, just like we had trying to get into this call today. And what ended up happening was that we got drug kicking and screaming into the charting business. So I'm a founder and a partner of ProAct Traders, which is a charting software company. And I provide the educational component for that. And I'm also a analyst for FX Street, for investing.com, and for MarketFi. I post there every day trading ideas. And over the weekend, I do a pretty long blog for them also. So, that's kind of the history of how I got here. And currently we are a trading company. Our traders have learned the methodology that I teach, that I learned from the bankers, and they literally make hundreds of pips a day. And people come in and just are pretty amazed at how many pips our traders are able to get. So that's how I got here.
That's a really interesting topic, trading around like what the bankers are doing, because I don't think a lot of retail traders understand anything about what goes on in the institutional corporate side of things. So I know that the topic is target trading, understanding how the big boys work. So, but before we get into like the how the big boys works, I'm really pumped to get this, get my brain into this because it fits with my own Forex fundamental methodologies. But you consider yourself, what you've mentioned target trading. So what is target trading? What does that mean for you?
Well, the first thing is that we have to analyze and figure out what the big boys are doing today. And then that we ask the question, why are they doing that? Okay. Because they're constantly manipulating the market, but they have several other factors that are going on. One, they get paid to fill orders. All right. And there are about $400 billion worth of retail money in the market every single day with about 200,000 retail traders. And those traders, those orders have to get filled. Well, the bank gets paid to fill those orders, all right? So that's number one. They're always looking for where the orders are stacked. You know, people don't realize that at a bank, they got a big old dashboard and they get to look out there and they get to see all the traders that are stacked up with limit orders at a certain price point, all right? Well, their job is to go fill those orders. So they drive the market to get those orders, all right? Now, professional traders all know where those levels are. And so they are looking to put their positions on there. You know, dumb money, for instance, in a down move, dumb money will sell at the bottom. A professional trader will never sell at the bottom. He's only going to sell at the top. And so what happens is traders see the market going down, they enter a trade, and then it goes against them. They go, "Dah, the broker stopped me out again." Well, no, they ran out of orders, and they're going back up to find the sellers. And those levels are known levels in the charts. Bankers are technical traders. They trade to known levels in the market, and they're manipulating the market for two reasons. One of them is they have an agenda. So their agenda may be to go down to a certain place. A lot of that has to do with the fact that they are trading in the option market at the same time. You know, one of the things that retail traders don't also realize is the market is $5.3 trillion a day. That's an estimate. But we trade the spot part of it, which is only about $2.8 trillion a day. The rest of it is option contracts and swaps and forward swaps and those kind of things. And then, of course, commercial clients where they need to swap money from one country to another. And so we're trading only a small, significant part of that market, but it's not all of the market. And those other factors really, really drive the currencies. A great example is we were talking about today in the room that there's a $3.5 billion option contract on the euro dollar at 1.2500 today. Well, we're sitting about 60 pips below that. All right. The market, the structure of the market is it should go down, but we're not anticipating it to go down because the big boys who have that $3.5 billion option up there are going to do what are going to throw every bit of money they can to get that in play. And so, you know, what happens to retail trader, they're not even clued into any of that that's going on the side and how the market is being manipulated for two reasons, filling orders and also creating a structure that all professional traders and other banks know. You know, like, for instance, HSBC can't call up Bank of America and say, "Hey, you know, we got this nice trend we've created. We're trying to get down to a certain number. Would you go help us out?" Well, they can't do that because that's called price fixing. All right. So how do they get them to do it? They do it in the charts. And so they create this market that is not random at all. It is, a candle could be random. Yeah, sure. But the market structure is not random at all. The big boys, the tier one bankers, are creating a market structure to get that agenda taken care of. Right. And so that happens day in and day out. And that's why you have consistently see patterns over and over and over again in the market. If they were just random things in the market, they would be just that. They would be random, but they're not. We have bull flags. We have bear flags. We have head and shoulders. We have inverse head and shoulders. We got rising wedges. We got falling wedges, on and on and on and on. Well, those things are created by bankers to continue movements. There are really only, except for double and triple tops, there's only four reversal patterns: a head and shoulders, an inverse head and shoulders, a rising and falling wedge. Every other pattern that you see in the market is a continuation pattern. Why do we say continuation? Because they're trying to continue a move that they have built. All right, with an agenda in mind and an objective. Maybe it's an option contract that they got $1 billion down, you know, lower or higher, whatever direction the trend is happening to go. And then, of course, we have the sideways market. Everybody thinks the market is trending. And if you went and looked at a retail trader's charts, they'd have trends everywhere. The reality is that the market only trends 30% of the time. 70% of the time, it's going sideways. All right. Now, sideways markets for bankers are heaven for them. because it's very simplistic, and they can easily go to the targets. And see, the targets now become the Fibonacci values inside that sideways market, the previous support or resistance, the trend line. All those factors come into play, and it's all part of structure. And the structure of the market is dictating what kind of continuation pattern we need to keep in play so that our agenda gets met by all the bankers, right? So there are 15 major bankers in the world who control 78% of all market volume. 78% of everything you see on a chart is created by a big boy, all right? So, you know, we're significant retail traders. We're $400 billion a day, and we're trading with stops. And so they love to go get us, all right? That's just a fact. That's what they love to do. They're not hunting stops per se. They don't really care about your two-lot mini and all that, but they are interested in fulfilling orders. And in the process, traders who are on the wrong side of the order flow get stopped out. So they're not actively trying to stop you out. They just know it's going to happen in the process. So when they get for instance, they put in a what we call a flag. You and I would call that consolidation. They don't call that consolidation. They call that accumulation. They are accumulating positions. And when the breakout occurs, they're going to own all those positions. That's what they are, including the ones that lose, which that's going to be the great opportunity for them.
Huh. Man, my mind's sufficiently blown here. I was just looking at my questions that I had prepared for you, and you just literally destroyed 90% of those questions in like 5 minutes. It's a really cool concept. But basically, retail traders lose money because they're fundamentally flawed in how they view the market. So
that's correct.
It sounds like you're saying that things just aren't random.
They're not random at all. Any candle could be random, right? I mean, you look at a freeway at rush hour, or you look at the M1 over there, Tom, in London, you know, and at rush hour, it's a zoo. It looks like a parking lot, okay? Well, but yeah, every single car, truck, SUV, whatever is on that freeway is random. But that freeway is not random. That freeway is the structure, and they're all going in the same direction. Right. That's kind of a way to look at it when you're looking at a chart. You've got a trend on there. You've got a sideways market. All those candles are not random at all, but you could call them random because, you know, there is a percentage of them that is random, but 78% of everything you see is caused by a big boy. I'll give you an example. When I was at FXDD, I was down in the pits one day with those guys, and I said, I asked them two questions. I said, hey, what is the average winning trader take for profit? Now, FXDD at the time was the second largest broker in the world. And they said the average winning trader makes 5 to 8 pips. Wow. Okay. And then I said, okay, well, how much money does it take to move this currency? And they say, well, on average, it takes $35 million to move the euro dollar 0.5 pip in the New York session. So that'll give you an idea. You know, try to wrap your head around those numbers and you go, yeah. Wow. How much money does it take it to move 20 pips? Well, you're talking up in the billions of dollars. And that's why it's a $5.3 trillion a day market. Well, how do all those people decide to be a buyer at the same time? And the only ones that count are the big boys. They're the only ones that can move it. We could all take all the money we got, all of us, and click the candle at exactly the same time, and we wouldn't even put a shadow on a wick. But they can move it because they're moving big, big amounts of money. That's it. So, and they do other things. They do things called front running. For instance, you know, the trader will come in and realize that you know, Sony is going to have a big order this afternoon at the London Fix or the New York Fix. They're going to have a big order coming in for, you know, $50-60 billion, where they need to exchange money from British pounds to yen. Okay, so on the pound yen, there's going to be an order placed at a known time. Well, the banker who's going to execute that order knows about it, and so he front runs it. In other words, he's placing bank positions prior to that. So when he puts the $50 billion in, all of a sudden it jumps it up 20-30 pips, and he makes all that profit. So they're doing stuff behind the scenes that retail traders aren't actually aware of at all. And what they're looking for is some indicator that tells them now's the time to buy, now's the time to sell. And they spend an inordinate amount of time trying to figure out what the right setting is and what's this and what's that and all that kind of stuff. If they would spend the same amount of time they go chasing indicator settings and learn how the market worked and actually did run, then they would be successful. but they don't do that because the one big thing is they're not confident. And of course, you know, it's very hard to learn structure and things like that from a CD or a DVD or something like that. It takes an inordinate amount of time in the market, studying studying patterns, studying what the structure of the market is, and seeing what the big boys did with that. If you look at a chart at any given time and you see any kind of a run that made a move, you ask yourself, how did all those people know to make that move up or down? And if you go prior to that, you'll see exactly how the market told them to do it. There's closing reverses as they close at the top for a move to the downside. There are exhaustion wicks as they run out of buyers to the upside. There are wedges, or there are triangles, or there are, you know, some sort of pattern that says, we're going to do this move. And it always will show up. But traders fail to take the time it takes to invest in learning how the market works. And the reason for that is that the rule of thumb is, for every hour you spend live trading, actually got a trade on in the market, you need to spend three hours in the past studying the market. So if you're in a New York session or the London session for 2 hours, all right, and you're finished, you have 6 hours of work to do today. Will you do it? Of course you won't do it. You got a job, you got a girlfriend, you got the pub, you got whatever's coming up, but it isn't 6 hours of work in the charts. And so traders fall back. And the further back they go, two things happen. One of them is they start losing. And so they think, what I need is, I need a better indicator, another indicator, a better setting, a new mentor, a new company to learn from. And so what they do is they go out in search of that. And what they've just done is complicated. They spend some time learning their current system, and then they blow that all up and go try to learn another one, or try a different setting, or this, whatever. And all they're doing is continuously complicating the process. The process of trading is very simplistic. We call it complexicated, all right? The market is complex. But it's not complicated. If you take every single piece and break it out separately and say, I'm going to study poles today, or I'm going to study bear flags today, in a matter of 20, 30 minutes, you understand each and every part of that, right? Well, what happens to traders is they don't realize that the way your brain works is that your brain has a place in the market, in its brain, where it stores images of things you're seeing on charts. For instance, bear flags, okay? So it is a place in your brain called bear flags, all right? And if you decide, I'm going to go look today at all the patterns I can find, you're putting them all in that one space. Now, when you go to retrieve that information, what happens? Well, there's an inverse head and shoulders there. There's a rising wedge still there. There's all, because what we did was you didn't do it methodically, instead of tackling bear flags all at one time. And science tells us that you need 300 images of something in your brain for you to get what is called reticular cognition. And reticular cognition is, reticular means visual, cognition means understanding, that your subconscious mind instantly recognizes what it is and will tell your conscious mind what to look for. All right. Well, the only way you do that is you methodically study the market. You're not going to get it from live trading. And here comes a pair flag, and here comes a different candle, and there's a set of railroad tracks or sisters, whatever you call them. And what you're doing is you're throwing mush up into your brain. And so traders need to understand that it is a methodical process. And because it's methodical, you can't learn it in 3 weeks. That was my mistake when I first got out of it. You know, I went out and spent $5,000 to get educated, and then I spent $5,000 an account and blew it up. Why? I thought it was going to be easy. Well, all I had was mush in there, nothing. I hadn't methodically put it back together. So when I tore it all apart and put it back together, this time with the right information, right education, with the right people who were there at the right time, things came together for me at that point. So, you know, I listen to traders all the time saying, you know, man, this can't be hard. It's so easy. You either buy or you sell. It's so easy. And they're going to get whacked, totally whacked. That's all there is to it.
Really good stuff here. So I want to kind of back it up a little bit here. It sounds like you're not a fan of indicators, but if a person wants to understand market structure, like just at its most basic level, so that they can kind of start thinking in terms of like where the big boys are going to move prices in the future, potentially, where would they get started?
Well, first let me address the indicator thing. I have nothing against indicators as long as you don't trade them. Right? Now, one of the big problems with traders is that they're supposed to be information gatherers, and people who are traders, who want to be traders, That's one of their weaknesses. Okay. That's, you know, here's the deal. Everybody in the world has learned they got to drive an hour to work, spend 8 to 10 hours a day working for the man, and drive an hour home. They follow the rules. Traders don't want to do that. You want to break the rules. You want to go in the market and you want to make as much money as you made doing all that stuff in 2 hours. Okay. So you've already come to it that a mindset, I break rules and I'm here for the quick buck. I'm not here to actually learn how this market works. So we start in the hole. That's what we do. So I don't have anything against that. Well, I use a MACD every day. That's an indicator. Okay. We have a oscillator on our charts. Nothing wrong with that. We just don't trade it. What we allow it to do is feed us information that we can't get any other way, right? Now, the problem with traders is they think the information from the indicator is the holy grail. That's what's telling me to trade. And the reason they're doing that is they have no confidence in their ability to understand the structure, right? So structure is something like, can I find a trend? What are the rules of finding a trend, all right? How many points do I need? Do I need lower highs, higher lows? You know, where is the heart line, those kind of things. So there are rules about every single thing on there, fibs, trends, previous support or resistance, all that kind of thing. But the two major ones are a trend or no trend and Fibonacci ratios, all right? The market does not turn in the middle of nowhere. If you put, all you got to do is just put a fib on any major move and watch, and then watch as the next move goes to the pip to each one of those Fibonacci values, okay? Those are the targets for the next move. Bankers go back in the past, find out what they did in the past, and then they do it again. They're mathematicians. You know, if you drive up to a bank, you got your, a Ferrari out there, you drop up, you got your Armani suit on, your Cole Haan shoes on, and you walk in there and say, I want to be a trader, they're going to show you the door. But you walk in, you drive up there with an old Volkswagen Beetle, you got an Oxford suit on, you got a bow tie, and you're tying your shoes, they'll say, let me show you to your desk. That's what they want. They want conservative type of people who are not willing to take great risks. Bankers don't lose because they don't take great risks. And that doesn't mean they don't take risks. Their job is to take risk. That's their job. But they take structured risk. They stay. Yeah,
the financial crisis probably would point towards some people take more risk than others, I'd argue.
Yeah. Well, you know, you always have people who are have too much position and too much power in the wrong spot. So you're absolutely right about that. So structure is, you know, you can't trade the Forex, at least based on structure, without knowing where the Fibonacci's are. You can't do that. Jesse Livermore said it. He stated it very well. He's a very famous trader. He said the market does the game doesn't change because human nature doesn't change. And human nature, they didn't know anything about Fibonacci's till this rice farmer at the 1800s decided to do a Fibonacci sequence on rice futures, and he found out they're going right to the point of that Fibonacci, and he made millions of dollars, and nobody could figure out what he was doing. And all he was doing was running Fibonacci numbers because the market will turn there just because human nature will make it turn there. But it happens to be measurable. That's our edge. We now have the ability to find where that point of maximum exposure is going down, Where will they turn? At the Fibonacci. They will turn there even if the Fibonacci number wasn't there. But bankers have learned to use those, and they don't turn in the middle of nowhere. You don't see a candle that just in the middle of nowhere, all of a sudden, everybody in the world decided to exit their trade here. Well, remember, that's the big bankers, because that's 78% of everything you see. How did they all know to do that? Because they knew where the target was. And that's exactly what target trading is finding those values based on structure and waiting for the market to make a move to accomplish that agenda. All right. So we have three questions we ask every day when we get into charts. We have three very simple questions. What are the big boys doing today and why? All right. That's everything about the structure of the market. Is it trending? Is it in a third wave? Is it in a fifth wave? Are we correcting in a fourth wave to go to a fifth wave? All those questions. And every one of those is simplistic, by the way, and does not take a lot of rocket science to understand. But every day there are nuances. There could be, 20 different variables on one currency, and on another only three that make a difference. The job of a trader is to figure out which ones are important. So once we figure out what are they doing today and why, we pretty much got a handle on the structure. Well, once we know the structure, we know where our trade is hiding. It's below this fib. It's a break of this PSR. They're going to crash into this trend wall, and they're going to turn it to the downside, or they're going to break it to the upside. All right, those kind of things. Once we know that, we're looking for the next probable move, not possible. right? Possible is if it goes up, it goes down, it goes sideways. That helps us nothing. Doesn't do a thing. But probability, what is the highest probability? The highest probability is based on the structure of the market, because the professional traders who are going to move that market are all trading the structure. And once we know that, then it becomes the last question, what's my risk? The decision to make a trade for most retail traders is, did my indicator tell me to do that? Did my moving average crossover happen? Did my whatever happen? Okay, that's the decision they make the trade. The people who are target traders are those who use structure. It's all about risk and reward. All right. How much am I willing to risk to see if I'm right? That's what Andrew Manaker, he's a famous trading psychologist, said. How much are you willing to risk to see if you're right? And that's what determines a trade setup and a trade, not a trade setup that's just standing there for whatever reason it is.
And you mentioned that it was, wouldn't you understand the way you do it is fairly simple, but I'm interested, as a newbie trader, how long does it take to someone to get up to speed with these kind of concepts?
A person who's diligently working at it could probably master enough to be successful in probably a month and a half. And it'll probably take 3 months or so to be consistently successful. And of course, every day is a learning experience. I mean, you know, I've been trading 15 years and I learn every day. You know, it never stops learning because the horizon you never hit the horizon. You get over this one, you go, oh my gosh, I never saw that before. But you never would have saw it at all if you hadn't already taken the journey that got you to the point where you see something different. So that process never stops. But, you know, I tell traders that, you know, get it out of your mind that you can learn to trade in 3 weeks. You know, that's just not going to happen. I'll give you a good example here. Chart patterns. There are 14 chart patterns that we need to know. All right. So if you're doing the scientific way, how do I learn chart patterns? I have to do one pattern, let's say bear flags. I have to do one pattern, 300 of them all at one time. So this afternoon, if I decide to do bear flags, I got to go do 300 of them. I got to draw them, see what the market did with them. Draw them, see what the market did with them. Okay. Once I do that, then I got to take 24 hours off and I can't do any patterns. All right. Because my brain needs to build a retrieval system to that place in the brain where it has stored those. All right. Now, what happens to traders is, okay, let's take 14. That's 14 patterns. It takes 48 hours to do them. That's 28 days doing nothing but chart patterns. And you haven't done anything else. That's a month. It takes you a month to learn chart patterns. And that's assuming you're doing it every day. All right. Which you aren't. Yeah. You know, you got a life. So everybody, including me when I first started, misjudges how long it takes to learn, right? But I tell traders, what if it took you 6 weeks longer than the longest it took anybody to learn this? What does it matter? Now you have a skill you can do from anywhere in the world. I've traded in London. I've traded in Bucharest. I've traded in Rome. I've traded in Latin America. I've traded in Mexico City. I've traded in Hawaii. Traded anywhere. I got an internet connection because I have a skill that I can use anywhere. So it doesn't really matter how long it takes, but you need to commit to the process.
Yeah. I want to take it to a little bit of strategy here because there's a lot of really good stuff in here. As I was doing my stalking, I like to do some reconnaissance on our guests to find out what they're about. I was watching a video on your website, and it was on the break, hook, and go. And you mentioned a lot of things in there that I found really interesting that kind of forced me to question my paradigm of what I thought about breakouts. Could you describe like what a break, hook, and go is, and then what kind of causes it to happen?
Well, there are several factors. First of all, the barrier that they have to break, whatever that is significant. Okay, the market stopped there, stalled there, or whatever it did, and they're going to need a big boy to push it through there. All right. So what the market makers do is create a pattern to make sure that they can get through that. Now that could be a bull flag, a bear flag. It could be a flag where they're going to do a pole trade, whatever it happens to be. But what ends up happening, they're accumulating positions during that period of time. All right. And the only time that you don't get a break, it can go, that matters is when you have a fundamental announcement, because everybody gets flat before a fundamental announcement. But all other times, markets are moving continuously. All right. So the banker has agreed to take from the broker any trade the broker sends him. All right. Both of them have agreed to take the buy if you want to sell, or the sell if you want to buy. And the reason for that is the casino theory is that 90% of retail traders are going to lose. This is a no-brainer. I'm going to make money no matter what. And that's exactly true. They do that. All right. So when the market does break, it's kind of like a train leaves the station, but it left half the people behind. And so it comes back up for two reasons. One of them is to get the rest of the traders in the direction they're going. That's number one. But number two, it is to get rid of the trades that they have accumulated that are going the wrong way. So most of those, of course, are the dumb money or the retail market. All right. So traders are trading some indicator. Okay, all of a sudden my candle turned bright purple, and that's my signal. Okay, so I buy because of that, not because of the structure. I buy because my candle turned a different color. All right. And so those people are going the wrong way. Well, the banker, remember, owns the other half of that trade. He owns the other side of that, and he wants to get rid of it. So he quickly hooks back up, and he dumps that trade quickly on the dumb money, and then they go down and go to wherever they're trying to go. All right. Now, the other thing is when they come back up, there have been tens of thousands of traders who've been waiting for the break but did not have an entry order in. So when they come back up, those traders enter the trade on that hook, right, that comes back up. And those traders enter the trade. And what it does is propel the trade in the direction away from the pattern that was already put in. That's number one. It also helps the bankers in order to get the movement going. And the hook back up is to get rid of the bad trades. All right. I'll give you an example that makes real sense. Okay. Back in the 2008 area, we had a mortgage crisis. Well, what ended up happening was tens of thousands of people quit paying their mortgage, right? Now, who owned those mortgages? The bank, right? So what did the bank start doing? See, the bank is a mortgage business, not in the house-owning business, right? And now they own houses everywhere, all right? So what do they got to do? They got to get rid of them, all right? So what do? They start short selling them. They sell them at auction. They'll quick sell them. They'll do anything they can to get those things off the books. Anything they can't get off the books has to be write-offable. It's the same thing in a break, hook, and go here. Think of the candles as a house that they own, and they're in the mortgage business, right? They're in the spread business, all right? They need to dump that house because they're not in the house business. So that's what they're trying to do, is get rid of that. And break, hook, and goes happen about 90% of the time. It's a statistical probability. So here's what a lot of traders do. Yeah, but every once in a while it just goes, so I don't pay any attention to it. Do you make a methodology up for yourself that for something that only happens 1 out of 100 times, or do you make a methodology up for yourself that happens 99% of the time, and every once in a while you get caught on the one? Well, obviously the latter is the way that you're supposed to do it, but traders don't think that way. You know, the amazing thing to me is that if you're a trader, you've amassed enough money to have some fun money on the side or whatever. Okay. So you either had to be your own boss and you were successful. You worked for a company, you were successful, whatever. Well, why were you successful? Because you made good business decisions. Even if you were an employee with somebody, you didn't get fired because you continuously made good business decisions for the employer. Now, when we go to trading, we throw all that stuff out of the window. All right. We no longer make business decisions. We make gambling decisions. All right. We look at the market and we go, well, you know, I'm willing to bet $20 here. I could make 100. See, the whole mentality changes. You would never do that in your business. Nobody in the world would do the business. And then what happens to traders is there are two sides of your brain, the left side and the right side. The left side of your brain is the analytical side. So when you're sitting there and you're working on charts and you're looking for trends and you're putting your fibs and those kind of things on the charts, you're using your left brain, the analytical side. As soon as you push that button, you're on the right side, which is the emotional side. That's the side that has fight or flight in it, right? And if your right brain is not controlled by your left brain, what ends up happening is your right brain takes over. And now, the car, oh, went down 10 pips. Oh, it's coming back on me. Oh, man, it's coming back on me. Oh, I'm going to click it out. Boom. You just clicked it up. Well, I was a winner, man. I got 8 pips out of that deal. Woo, that's awesome, man. I'm a winner. And you know what? Yeah, you're a winner. You just won the battle, but you just lost the war. You must be right 90% of the time for the rest of your trading career to trade for 5 to 8 pips. 90% of the time, you just stack the deck against you. Would you do that in your business? Of course not. You would never do that. Would you do it in trading? I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it in an hour. I'll do it anytime I want to. You see, we just totally get whacked out when we become traders. And trading is a business. If you treat it as a business, how did you learn your business? You learned your business. Some of you went to school. Doctors go to school for 8-10 years before they learn their business. Okay. They commit to that process. All right. Traders don't want to commit to the process because they get in some forum or somewhere and they think, hey, it's exciting, man. It's, oh, look at how many pips this guy made. And all he did was this. And then you go, that's it. That was what I'm looking for. That's it. I'm going to do that. And you don't know anything about the market. All right. That guy may be actually an excellent trader, and that's what he's doing. Now, you know, I've trained a lot of successful traders. I've traveled with a lot of successful traders. You know, I've interviewed a lot of successful traders. All right. And every successful trader I know can tell you in less than 45 seconds how they trade. That's a fact. 45 seconds is all they need to tell you how to trade. A retail trader couldn't do that.
No, it's too complicated.
We don't know how we trade. That's probably why.
Exactly. That's exactly correct.
Okay, Scott. So we're getting towards the end of the podcast here, and I'm a little bit sad that it's coming to an end. But I was wondering if there is anything that you think that a retail trader listening to this interview right now, like, what would be something that they need to learn that they can maybe take away and apply to their trading soon?
Yeah, my biggest thing for retail traders is, and the first trade that I teach traders to trade when I'm, you know, with them in a mentorship capacity, is to learn what we call the pull trade. And the pull is a very simplistic trade. It's very easy to see. They happen all the time. They have a high, high, high statistical probability. One of the things you want to do is get success early on. Well, how could I do that? Well, you could learn to trade pulls. What is a pull? Well, first of all, it's set up because there's a flag pattern. That's a sideways move of about, you know, 30 to 60 pips, going up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And every time they go up, a big boy comes in and puts money in and shoots it back down. At some point in time, when the momentum comes back in the market, that flag will break. And studies show that they overwhelmingly break in the direction that the market came into them. All right. So think about, you're looking and you see, oh, there's a sideways move on there. It's about 2 inches long. Wow. Okay. How did we get into that? We got into it going up. Okay. Well, studies show that over 78% of the time, and usually around 90% of the time, that currency will break out to the upside. Now, here's the key. All right. You get a break, hook, and go when that happens almost every time. I would say 98 out of 100 times you'll get that. Why? Because it was accumulation for the bankers. It was consolidation for you and I. And then all we have to do is we simply measure the movement going into it. Let's say it was 62 pips and then we went sideways. Okay. When we come out, every professional trader in the market is gunning for 62 pips. Every single trader in the market, and that market will go almost to, it may go further, but almost every time it's going to go to the pips, 62 pips. All right. So how easy is that? All right. How easy is it to find sideways markets? Yeah, well, that's a retail trader's greatest bane. Oh man, the market went sideways today. It's up. You know, that's what they do. And the professional traders go, hallelujah, baby, come to Papa. This is going to be awesome. You know, It's a totally different outlook on what it is. Well, so what do you got to do? Well, first of all, you got to go practice them 300 times. Okay. What you got to do, they're going to take you some time because you got to make sure you find them. And guess what? Where do they go most of the time? In between the markets. The market goes to sleep in between the market. A flag is a continuation pattern. So they want to continue the market. So the banks just sit there, and every time it goes too low, as if it might go the other way, somebody throws enough money in, and in the afternoon it's not much, and they pop it back up, pop it back up, pop it back up. Money comes back in. Let's say it's between the New York, and all of a sudden you're trading the Aussie dollar, and Sydney opens. Bing! It goes up for 62 pips. And the retail trader goes, what the heck just happened? And all the professional traders go, thank you very much. I'll take the 62 pips and I'm going to have a Foster's, man. You know? That's what they'll do, you know? So it's very easily seen in the marketplace, right? It's an easy, easy pattern. And all you got to do is go practice them. Don't take my word for it. Don't ever take anybody's word for anything. Go in the market and prove that they're wrong. And if you can't prove it wrong, then you got to add it to your strategy. So we have traders who have doubled and tripled their account trading pulls alone. Well, guess what? Pulls are boring. Oh man, it's so boring. Well, yeah, it is boring. There's nothing to it once you learn it. Okay, but you know, are you really excited about the adrenaline high you're getting when you lose 60 pips? You know, that's not boring. I'd rather have boring. That's what I want. You know, because they're statistically probable, and because they're easily seen, and because they're easily practiced, keyword, easily practiced, all right, you now are learning target trading. You're learning how to find a trade. You're learning how to figure out where the currency is trying to go, and you're learning how to find the actual target that the market is seeking. All right. Will they get there? There's no guarantee they'll get there. In fact, if it happened 100% of the time, you couldn't get your garbage picked up tomorrow. Why? Because your garbage man would be a Forex trader.
So Scott, I've got to stop you off there. Everything you've said is really valuable, really useful. And like I said, it's great to broaden people's understanding and horizon. And even better, they've got a little tummy tickle at the end of that with a bit something to go away and do a bit of homework, which, yeah, and it is homework. It's going to take hard work and dedication. And we keep on saying this every single week. So that's been really valuable. Scott, if you want to find a bit more about you and what you guys do, it's proacttraders.com. So proacttraders.com, and get on there and just find out a bit more about you and your company.
That'd be awesome.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
You bet, guy. Thank you. Thanks for everybody who's listened. Glad you're here. Hope we helped you a little bit.
Thank you, Scott. Yeah, exactly as you explained there, Brandon, it was nice and fast, quality content that is actionable, stuff that I can go away and research, things like the break hook and go and all that kind of stuff that is, we haven't really covered on the podcast. So more information, the better from my perspective. Key takeaway for me, the way that he explains using indicators and the fact that, you know, you should not trade off indicators. You shouldn't just sit there and wait for the RSI to go, you know, above X amount or whatever and go, right, I'm going long on this trade. It's actually should be used as confirmation. So you look for the market structure for the setup that you're happy with. Then you look for the additional indicators for the confirmation. All right, cool. Happy days. I can see the market structure. I believe X is going to happen. Okay, cool. My indicators tell me there is a strong correlation to what I think is going to happen and what the indicators tell me is going to happen. I can go away and enact that, which was really valuable again for my mindset. So yeah, thank you for that, Scott.
Yeah, I found it was really interesting the way that he described, like, first, market structure. Cool. Like, that's something I believe in for sure, is, you know, there's obviously a structure that happens to the market. And then being able to kind of like define it in a way that you can then go and have a pattern that kind of recurs over and over and over. Like, since then, I've gone to the charts and I've looked at this break hook, which is really just the big boys, as he calls them, squaring up their trade, meaning they're getting, because they always have to take the other side of your trade too, like, and then have to flush that stuff out of their inventory and then go into some and then start pushing the market. It makes a lot of sense. I've seen it quite a lot, even on small time frames, where you get some sort of pattern and then the price breaks out of that pattern and there's this retracement. I've actually started to incorporate that into my patience in trading. Because for one thing, I tend to see price movements and I'm like, yeah, sentiment is really strong. So I'm like, smash, gimme, gimme. Yeah. But I always, not always, but I tend to sit in drawdowns because of that. So I've been a bit more patient with some of my trades and being like, well, maybe I'll just wait until it does the square up and save myself some pips and some years off my life.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, it's the... You're waiting for the confirmation, aren't you? You're waiting for a small little bit of retracement where you can get in a bit of a discount, but you still have the strong fundamental belief that it is going to continue in the direction that it's broken out in. Yeah. Is that about right?
Yeah. And I really like how, you know, he's technically defining kind of what I'm looking for fundamentally and sentiment-wise. So he's trying to define, like, where's the real estate of the day? Like, where is the wide open spaces that the price is likely to move through. And that's, I'm looking to identify that, okay, well, where are these, you know, the big institutional traders? What are they going to do based on the news that's available in the market right now? And they kind of line up really kind of perfectly together for me, because, you know, I'm not the greatest technical trader in the world. I admit that, and because I staunchly have defied it for many years, but I'm willing to admit that this is something that makes sense to me. So, yeah, I like it. Good stuff. I'm going to go have a peek under the skirt and see what's going on over at Proact.
Yeah, happy days, man. So moving on slightly, I know we've been talking about putting together a few different bits of information about fundamentals and also the kind of basics of Forex trading for real, complete and utter newbie traders. Well, I've actually created the prototype website on Two Blokes. So, and I'm going to open up to you listeners. If you can go to twoblokestrading.com/learn-to-trade, and inside there, you're going to have the initial foundation of getting into Forex. And we are talking complete and utter Billy basics. If you're new to trading, get on there and have a look at those videos. You can also now register on the website, which then just allows you to track your course progression, which I'm very excited about because, you know, all technology stuff. And, you know, I did it with a little bit of help. So you can get on there now and you can register and also track your progress through the course. It's all in video format, but also you've got the content in written format underneath it.
And what I'd really appreciate from you guys is if you like it, if it's interesting, if it's quality, please email back to blokes@twoblokestrading. Give me your thoughts. And also, if you can get it out there and just spread the word for anyone that's thinking about getting into trading Forex, if you can just share those videos out on social media and just, because I would like to spend more time creating more videos like that. But the only way we can do that is through spreading the word and getting more traffic to the website to justify it from our perspective. And the reason why I want to do it from a two blokes perspective is because all the content, even from the fundamentals course that Brandon's working on or the basic trading course, is that it's independent, it's impartial. This is just information that we've gone away and researched and used our knowledge and generated. So we're not trying to sell a course, we're not trying to sell anything. We just want to give the best information possible to you guys as listeners or guys that come to the website. Check it out. Okay, just before we go, for those that are still interested in the Yieldcoin ICO and want to get an update from Sam, we've got, as always, at the end of the outro of the podcast, Sam's going to give us an update on the actual ICO launch, how much money has been raised and what the plans are for the future. So stay tuned. Yet another podcast of Two Blokes. Hope you enjoyed it and look forward to chatting next week.
See you later, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Two Blokes Trading podcast with Tom and
Brandon.
Be sure to subscribe and check out twoblokestrading.com. And we'll see you back here next Monday.
Welcome back on the show, Sam.
Hi there. How you doing?
Pretty damn well. Well, apart from the sob story about my frozen pipes and having to move to my mother's house to actually live and exist and have flushing toilets, but I'm all good. What I want to do here is just give the listeners a very, very quick potted history from my side in terms of the journey to date. And then if you can update us of where we currently are at and can put aims for the future.
Yeah, perfect.
Cool. So previously, we've been in the pre-ICO phase, which essentially is the VC funding stage. It's where, my understanding is where you guys got a concept together, wrote a white paper and presented that to people who were maybe interested in investing at the venture capitalist stage. So where basically, I've got an idea, do you want to get involved? And that's been about a month's worth of progress in that, where Samuel & Co. and Yieldcoin have been putting together your offering and put more meat on the bone as to how you're going to achieve that. And now we're really at the launch was Wednesday, so a couple of days ago now. So keen to hear about how you did with the VC funding and where you want to go from now on.
Yeah, so I mean, everything went absolutely amazing. We're 24 hours in that we went through from 1st of March, and we hit soft cap in the first 12 hours, and then within 24 hours, we was at over 2 million, and that number's still increasing now. Great result from the partners joining on board as well. We signed up with Phase 2 Design Studios, and they're a seven-figure turnover business, and they basically joined us in at a VC stage, and they also are adopting the Yieldcoin as a form of payment for their customers. They're obviously talking to all of their clients as well about Yieldcoin and looking to integrate Yieldcoin with overseas payments to get away from those high bank charges. So that was awesome in regards to that. We've got lots of great partners. We also teamed up with Elect Lifestyle. They're a luxury travel and VIP service company. And they're looking to implement the payment solutions to allow clients to transact with Yieldcoin. So, if the coin does very well in the next kind of 12 to 24 months, you could see some guys going over to those for the VIP services. Would be great.
Oh, yeah. I heard you have, was it VIP jets and yachts that you can hire out, which would be, guys thinking about doing that with Yieldcoin at some point?
Hotels and villas, luxury cars, concierge services. So, really opening the gateways up to, bring this to a real use case on a business to business level. And then obviously Redline Supercars, which is, one of the UK's leading prestigious performance and supercar companies within the UK. And they're also sponsoring Yieldcoin development as a founding member and adopting Yieldcoin as a payment form for their car sales. So really opening up the market for those guys that are, crypto rich, but don't like to transfer back to fiat normal currency. So now they can just, go straight into from crypto to
a car.
Crypto. Great.
it's dangerous. So I went on their website, and it is, you're like a kid in a candy shop as soon as you go onto their website and see the cars that they're offering and how much they cost. And I was just, honestly, I lost about an hour of my life just perusing what was available.
Yeah. They tell me about it. It should be like a banned website out or off this, definitely. too much time in it. And then obviously we've got other people like Samuel Co Trading, obviously, and then Totem as well, which is another lifestyle company. And then more importantly, we've gained our advisors, which is Thistle Compliance. They're specialist consultants that provide business operating in the financial services, such as insurance, energy, that kind of stuff, expert advice to make sure that we are FCA regulatory compliant. And so that's a great step for us, making sure that they're overseeing us from a regulatory point of view on KYC, AML, policies, things like that, to make sure that we are going to be, you know, probably, well, I think as far as I'm aware, the number one in the UK that's FCA compliant. I don't believe there is any other ICO at the moment that is FCA compliant. And it's nice to have that kind of stamp of approval.
I mean, it's huge, massive that you guys have achieved that. And just for those that don't know, so KYC, know your customer, which is all financial organizations like brokerages need to do, because they've got to know who they are and they're talking to the person that's investing the money or taking the money out. They need to know who they are. And also AML, anti-money laundering. So they've got to make sure that people are not just investing their ill-gotten gains into Yieldcoin and then taking it out and paying out that money in fiat currency and therefore avoiding tax. And also, you know, again, if it's ill-gotten gains, then it's actually illegal. So those two things and the FCA compliance is just absolutely unbelievable and really exciting to see where you kind of go from there. But speaking about going from there, so what's next for Yieldcoin?
Blimey. So next for Yieldcoin is obviously signing up our ICO division partners of whose coins we'll be releasing. There's a couple in the pipeline at the moment that is great. Now it's all just down to getting the community, you know, really getting the word out there and, you know, growing our Telegram group to, you know, let people know more about what Yield is, how it works with businesses, what we're looking to achieve. And, you know, start attending to these blockchain events and talking about Yieldcoin and the benefits that it holds.
Yeah. And for people that want to get involved in that Telegram group, which I highly recommend, because just get in there and there's people, really loads of useful people in there that will answer any of the questions you've got. Go to tublokestrading.com/Yieldcoin and there'll be a link that will take you to the Telegram sign up. But just taking it back to from a Yieldcoin perspective, the technology, I know this is the ICO phase, so the initial coin offering. So the technology hasn't necessarily been fully developed yet. So what is going on in the background and when will things start to be produced that are physical that people can see and go, okay, cool, Yieldcoin is delivering on what they say they're going to do?
Yeah, so we hit the soft caps. So that means that our 15 developers headed up by Matthew Wright are now fully working away, building the wallet and the offline exchange. That's the first part. They've obviously already gone through prototype design stages, things like that. So it's all now about implementing the exchange and the wallet and kind of merging them together. So they're working on that at the moment from the tech side of things. Obviously, Softcap got hit as well. So we are, from a business point of view, that is why we are going to a lot of the ICO kind of meetings in regards to setting up other businesses with a coin for them too. And, you know, like I said, the ICO division and the B2B side, as well as, you know, from a liquidity point of view, is probably one of the main liquidity drivers. So, you know, start hitting on those big liquidity drivers that's going to drive the value in the early stages when we hit the exchanges, and also driving the main factors of the technology side that need to be achieved at the kind of the first phase, which is obviously the wallets and token distribution and that kind of side.
Perfect. Okay, well, I'd like to, I'd say this probably is the last of the kind of the short-term updates. When do you think is the best time to get you back on again to kind of give the listeners a bit more of an update from Yieldcoin's perspective?
I'll probably say give us a month and a half, something along those lines, and we'll probably be able to come back with a lot more information of exactly what we've achieved, what we've done and things like that.
Brilliant. Really looking forward to that. Sam, thank you for taking time out of your busy day, and we'll speak to you in a month or so.
Awesome. Take care, guys.